Welcome to Built to Go, a van life podcast. I'm your host, Jeff Wagg, coming to you from the College of Curiosity. This time it's episode 204, and we're going to find out what AI thinks of van life. I mean, we've got this massive computer brain out there that knows everything. What does it know about us? We're also going to delve into some news here, and a lot of it is good and a lot of it is not good. We're going to talk about gasoline-powered generators and a product review of a major car dealership that might be worth looking into in certain circumstances. Hey guys, thank you very much for being here once again. I'm very happy to be here with you. And thank you once again to everybody who has donated to this show at buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. You folks have made it possible for this to have no ads. There are no ads in the podcast, and there are no ads in the YouTube version of this podcast. And that's because of you guys. So thank you very much. If you'd like to help support the show, visit buymeacoffee.com/built-to-go. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. And you can buy me a gallon of diesel, which soon I'm going to have to change to gasoline as I start switching from diesel life to gas life. But that's not what we're here to talk about. Oh, actually it is. Before I get started, people called me out on my gas mileage estimates from last week. Last week I said that I was getting about 16.5 miles per gallon in my 2011 Sprinter 2500, and I was getting 25 miles a gallon in my 2019 Ram 1500 Classic. And while I did not lie, there is context, of course. First context is that my Sprinter is completely or nearly completely built out. It's at its max weight, and it's an ambulance, so it has all kinds of stuff sticking out that inhibits airflow. And I have to manually calculate mileage in the Sprinter. I don't have anything that's telling me my instant mileage or is keeping track in any way. So that's where the 16.5 miles per gallon came from. And it basically has to be a mix of city and highway driving, even though I took that reading when I was doing mostly highway driving. Yeah, there was some city driving in there too. On the truck, I actually have a readout on the dashboard that tells me my mileage and my estimated mileage, etc. And it is telling me that on the best days, I'm getting 25 miles a gallon. Now, that is if I'm driving just highway, just on flat land, which is not in short supply in Illinois, and the truck's empty. There's nothing at all in that truck right now. So it is a little disingenuous to compare the two. I imagine I will be getting closer to 20 miles a gallon or 21 miles a gallon after I'm done building out the truck. However, the conclusion ends up being the same, and that is that I'm going to save a whole lot of money by driving the truck over driving the diesel Sprinter van just on fuel alone, not counting any other maintenance issues or whatever. So I just wanted to come clean there that the numbers I used were probably not the best numbers to use. So this isn't what I was going to talk about this week, and I don't know, I was playing around with Alexa and I figured, what if I asked Alexa to open ChatGPT, which is something you can do with Alexa, and then just started asking it some questions that I ask myself all the time. And I said, well, let's figure out what OpenAI, whose program is ChatGPT, that's the overarching company, what their creation thinks of van life. Now, you have to understand that AI, artificial intelligence, isn't. I mean, we're really talking about large language models here. What this thing is doing isn't thinking, it isn't rationalizing or anything like that. It's simply taking a huge amount of text and distilling it down into common elements. So what you can use this for is to kind of distill the entirety of the internet into a few sentences, at least the entirety of what opinions are being expressed on the internet. It can confirm or deny what I think about what people are saying about a topic. And, well, usually it's stuff I've already known because it tends to be very general. But I thought, well, what does AI think of van life? You know, we've seen all the posts on Instagram, we've seen all the YouTube videos and everything, and we kind of get this general sense. But what does that look like distilled into what we're calling AI? So I asked it three questions. The first one was, what are the benefits of van life? The second was, what are the disadvantages of van life? And the third was, what are the myths of van life? And, well, this is what it told me. So I'm not going to read these completely because it would take like half an hour to read all this, but I want to go down the list and tell you what this thing came up with. So, for what are the benefits of van life? It decided that the number it should give me is 8. I don't know why. It just picked 8. So number 1 of 8 is freedom and flexibility. Van life allows individuals to have unparalleled freedom and flexibility in their lifestyle. Okay, sure. I'm not going to argue with that. Number 2, cost savings. Living in a van can significantly reduce living expenses compared to traditional housing. Yeah, there's a whole lot to talk about there. Number 3, closer connection to nature. Van life often involves spending a significant amount of time outdoors, allowing individuals to connect more closely with nature. Yeah, okay, sure. Sustainability. Living in a van can be more environmentally friendly than traditional housing, especially if individuals adopt sustainable practices, such as using renewable energy sources, minimizing waste, and consuming fewer resources. Maybe? And this is my big problem with these type of things. Okay, a claim has been made here. Number 4, sustainability. A claim is made here. But there's nothing to support it. There's no references, there's no footnotes, there's nothing, go look at this study that so-and-so did. You just have to take its word for it. And I'm never going to do that. Number 5, simplicity and minimalism. Van life encourages a simpler and more minimalist way of living. Now, it presents that as a positive thing. And while many people think that's a positive thing, not everybody does. That's just a matter of opinion. Minimalism is a choice, or sometimes it's not a choice, but it's not necessarily a virtue. That's an opinion. I happen to like it, but not everybody does. Number 6, community and camaraderie. The van life community is vibrant and supportive. I would say that's mostly true. And many van dwellers connecting with like-minded individuals through social media, online forums, and in-person gatherings, such as van life festivals and meetups. Yeah, I think that's largely true. Like, if you're looking for community and camaraderie, I don't know that, oh, I should do van life is the logical conclusion to that. You can join anything and have that happen. I've said this several times. If you want community and camaraderie and you're new into a place or whatever, go volunteer. That will create that pretty quickly. Number 7, creative expression and customization. Aha! Converting a van into a livable space offers individuals the opportunity for creating expression and customization. Yes, I like this one. Van life, if you build out your own van, you are creating your space the way you want in a way it's hard to do in many other life endeavors. Number 8, personal growth and adventure. Van life often involves stepping outside one's comfort zone, embracing uncertainty, and confronting challenges head-on. True. I don't know that people necessarily want those things, but that definitely will happen. If you're going to head out there and live in a van or travel in a van, you're going to encounter things that you probably haven't thought of before, and you'll have to overcome them. So that was ChatGPT's basic idea for what are the benefits of van life. And I don't disagree largely. I just wish there was support for the claims. Now, what are the disadvantages of van life? Number 1, limited space. Living in a van means significantly less living space compared to traditional housing. So that's minimalism, right? This is, in a way, saying that minimalism is an advantage and a disadvantage, which I can agree with. That's okay. Number 2, lack of amenities. Vans typically lack many of the amenities found in traditional homes, such as a bathroom with running water, a full kitchen, or heating and cooling systems. Well, sure. I mean, you can do these things, but I just had a discussion with somebody online this week saying that they want their scamp trailer to be as temperature controlled as their home is, and I'm just like, it's not going to happen. That's really not possible with today's technology. You can't heat and cool the space that is a scamp the same way you can at home. So anyway, privacy and security concerns. Van life can sometimes involve privacy and security concerns. Thank you for repeating yourself. Particularly when parking in urban areas or unfamiliar locations, van dwellers may feel exposed or vulnerable. There's a risk of theft, vandalism, or unwanted attention from others. Sure, and all those things exist if you live in a condo, too, or in a home. Those concerns are the same. The difference is your familiarity with the concerns. You know your neighborhood. You know what to watch out for. That Walmart parking lot that's the first time you stayed at, you don't know what goes on there, and that heightens your sense that you're insecure. So, yeah, there's definitely security concerns living in a van, but one advantage you have in a van that you don't have in a house is that you can drive the van away. If somebody's tormenting you in your house, you're stuck. Number four, maintenance and repairs. Maintaining a van and keeping it in good condition can be time-consuming and costly. True! Maintaining a home and keeping it in good repair can be time-consuming and costly. Also true, but that is true. People often overlook just how expensive it is to keep their van going. Number five, weather and climate challenges. Vans offer limited insulation and climate control, making them susceptible to extreme temperatures and weather conditions. Absolutely true. Your house is going to be better able to withstand a blizzard or a storm than your van is in most cases. However, you can move your van. You do not have to be in Colorado in February in your van. You can be in Arizona. Number six, social isolation. While van life can provide opportunities for adventure and exploration, it can also be socially isolating at times. Now, it's interesting to me that it lists this as a disadvantage, and it is, unless that's what you're looking for. So, I won't go into it too much here, but when I was playing with Alexa this morning, I also asked it, what are the advantages of being a hermit? And social isolation came up as an advantage. Which I thought, well, I think a lot of people actually gravitate to van life for social isolation. They are looking for it. So, again, disadvantage, advantage, it's a matter of perspective. Number seven, legal and regulatory issues. Van dwellers may encounter legal and regulatory challenges related to parking, camping, and overnight stays. Yeah, absolutely. That is a major disadvantage. You are going to run into a lot less of that if you live in a traditional home or apartment. And one of the real frustrating things with van life, as it happens, drones as well, is nobody knows the laws. The people enforcing the laws don't know the laws, and it's just chaos. And you're basically at the whim of somebody who claims they're an authority figure, and you have a choice of going to battle with them or just moving on. And they're hoping you'll do the latter. Number eight, limited accessibility and convenience. Living in a van can sometimes entail sacrifices in terms of accessibility and convenience. I think this is just it. For some reason, it likes the number eight and it had to throw something in here. Access to amenities such as showers, laundry facilities, and grocery stores may be limited. Well, only if you drive somewhere really rural, which is the same as if you lived there. So, yeah, I'm going to throw that one out. I think that's crap. So, there's your advantages and disadvantages according to OpenAI. How about the myths of van life? And I find this one the most interesting. Myth number one, it's always an adventure. While van life offers the opportunity for adventure, not every moment is glamorous or exciting. Can agree with that one 100%. And yes, that applies to every other aspect of life as well. Number two, it's cheap and easy. While van life can be more affordable than traditional living in some cases, it's not necessarily cheap or easy. Okay, you just repeated yourself. The initial cost of purchasing and converting a van can be significant, and ongoing expenses for fuel, maintenance, insurance, and other necessities can add up. Well, and that's true, and I've said this many, many times, van life is not the ticket to living on $100 a month. Van life can be as expensive as living in a house. You absolutely have to keep up on it and have a buffer. And as far as easy, no. Nobody is having an easy van life. There are aspects of it that are easy, but it can be quite hard. And the RV people will tell you the same thing. Number three, it's always comfortable. Living in a van requires adapting to a smaller living space and often means sacrificing some comforts of traditional living. True. I think that in many ways, van life is uncomfortable, and you're actually spending a lot of your time trying to become comfortable, which has its own charms. I mean, that's kind of one of the charms of camping, is to turn an empty space in the wilderness into a comfortable place to be. However, I don't think I've ever heard anybody say that van life is always comfortable. So is that really a myth? I don't know. Number four, it's always legal and safe. Well, back to the regulatory issues. No, it's not always legal and not always safe. You know. Number five is a good one. It's only for young, single people. Wrong. That's just flat out wrong. I mean, those are the people you see on Instagram because those are the people you see on Instagram. Instagram tends to focus on the demographic of young single people. So, of course, you see them out in your vans. But I promise you, there are families of four doing van life. There are retired couples doing van life. There are middle-aged people doing van life. I mean, everybody, every demographic is out there doing van life. So it is not for one demographic. That is rather silly. Number six, it's a permanent vacation. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of derivative of the others. No, obviously it's not. Van life is life. It's life. You have life's challenges, ups and downs, just like you do any other kind of life. Van life is a lifestyle. It is not a permanent vacation. And number seven, kind of the same as number six, it's an escape from responsibility. Well, yeah. While some people may choose van life as a way to escape the pressures of traditional society, it's not a solution to avoid responsibilities altogether. Well, yeah, you're still going to have to pay for your insurance. You're still going to have to do your taxes. You have all the paperwork concerns that you did living in a house. You have to be responsible. Basically, you're living in a house that moves. That's it. You have some things that are different and some things that aren't, and you have some new responsibilities, such as learning customs of wherever you are and kind of accepting the fact that you're always a guest because you never own the land that you're standing on. But yeah, obviously van life is not an escape from responsibility. And number eight, well, for some reason there is no number eight. This one stopped at seven. So that is what OpenAI's ChatGPT thinks of van life. And I think it's interesting that if I had worded that a little differently, like if I had asked, why is van life cool? Or what are the best parts of van life? I would have gotten basically a different answer. Is this useful? I mean, to me, when you're writing or creating something, it should be new. And the one thing that ChatGPT can't do is give you anything new. It's all derivative. So it can be useful, I think, if you're trying to write an article and you want a basic outline of the things you should cover, but that's not the article. That is just the start. You need to then process that and synthesize something new. And, well, in today's internet, where 90% of what you see is just clickbait, honestly, I mean, there's absolutely no reason why I couldn't copy these three searches and make them three different articles on a website and say, oh, look at me, I'm a van life blogger, you know. Anyway, I just thought it was interesting to see what ChatGPT said about van life. And, you know, I don't think it's wrong. But did we learn anything new from this? I don't think so. Tech Talk. We have not spent any time really talking about gasoline generators. You know, traditional generators. Like, when people say generator, that's what they think of. They do not think of solar generators, which are not solar, nor are they generators. I'm really disturbed by the fact that we call them that, but it doesn't matter. We call them that because they were designed to replace traditional gasoline-powered generators. Now, there are diesel-powered generators and propane-powered generators, too. We're going to lump them all together for this. But why should you or should you not have a gasoline-powered generator for your rig? And the answer is, a lot of people do. In fact, I've seen quite a few vans lately where there's a generator on the back bumper somehow, like just tied up there or on some kind of a hitch rack or something like that, powering a window unit air conditioner that's cut into the side or in one of the back windows. You know what? That actually works. I mean, you can have air conditioning in your van if you're willing to run a generator. That's a totally legit thing. And some of the new generators now are pretty quiet. The Honda generators, which are a bit pricey, but they're pricey because they're so good. They're just quiet. I mean, you can hear them. They're not silent, but they're not like the generators of the old days. Like, I have a 50-year-old generator in my Winnebago, and yeah, you know that thing's on. Everybody in a mile knows that thing's on. The Hondas are a lot more quiet. And, okay, they're expensive, so what else could you do? Well, believe it or not, Harbor Freight has a line of generators called the Predator line that is actually pretty good. It's probably not going to last as long as a Honda, etc., but it's like half as much, if not less than half as much money. So, if I were going to buy a gasoline generator, I would look at those. There has been a change in technology on gasoline generators. You want to get an inverter-style generator. It basically produces the electricity a little bit differently. It produces DC, then inverts it to AC, whereas some of the older ones would rectify it to AC. It's technical differences. It doesn't matter, but it provides more stable power than the older generators. And believe it or not, they provide cleaner power than you likely have at home. So you don't have any worries there. The biggest problems with gasoline-powered generators, and I can think of three off the top of my head. One is that they use gasoline, so you have to keep filling them with gasoline. Some of them can be permanently installed in your rig and draw gas from your gas tank. That's how it is in my Winnebago, and the fill tube is above the bottom of the tank, so you won't run out of gas completely, kind of the way a diesel heater works. But, you know, you still are using gasoline, and you're using a good amount of gasoline, too. The other is that it's bulky. These things are heavy. They can weigh well over 100 pounds sometimes, depending on what you get. And they take up a lot of space. And you have to run them outside. It's not like you can run them inside and run an exhaust pipe out or anything like that. It would just be too loud and not safe. You do not want to do that. And one of the biggest reasons, and you'll see signs about this all the time if you go to campgrounds, is that they're loud. They make noise. They bother your neighbors. On my recent trip to Florida, I was staying at a rural kind of remote campground that had a generator policy that you could run your generators from 7 a.m. to 10 p.m. My first few days there were completely idyllic. I just sat there and listened to nature, and it was nice. And then on my last day there, somebody 10 campsites away from me fired up a generator and left it running the entire time. They did shut it off at 10 o'clock at night, so they were well within their rights to do that. But it completely changed my experience of that campground 10 sites away. And I can't fault them for camping the way they want as long as it's within the rules, but I wouldn't want to be that person that's changing everyone else's experiences. By the way, do you know why they were running their generator? Of course you don't. I figured it out because I drove by a couple times. They were playing Xbox. They weren't running an air conditioner or anything like that. They had set up a tent with a big screen, and they were playing Xbox on it, and that's what the generator was for. So, hey, you know, good for them. They're having fun, but they were impacting everybody else's experiences. So, is a generator right for you? Only you can decide. For me, I have not found a reason to have one yet. I mean, the one that's in my Winnebago is built into it. I hardly ever use it. But they will provide power so long as you provide them fuel. And if you are in a winter environment or maybe in a super cloudy environment where you can't get solar power and you have no way to get shore power, I can definitely see a case for having a generator, especially if you have the space. Van life news. Oh, three pieces of news here today. The first one's a little bit surprising to any of us. The executives, and this is from Motor One, I'll have a link in the show notes, the executives at Volkswagen say there's no market for the ID. Buzz camper van. Now, if you've been following the trades, the ID. Buzz is a kind of a callback to the Volkswagen camper vans of yore. You know, if you watch the Combi Life YouTube channel, that's an example of this. And they came out with new ones, and they were electric, and they had all kinds of modern camping features, but were basically that same niche where they were a very small kind of weekend style camper that everybody was thrilled about. The entire van life community was like, yes, yes, this is what we want. Woohoo, woohoo. But no, the suits at Volkswagen say, nah, nobody wants this. And as to whether we're going to get it or not in the U.S., we don't know. There's been delay after delay after delay after delay. And with the executives saying this, I'm thinking that we're probably not going to see them, or we'll see very few, and they will be prohibitively priced and probably bought by collectors rather than people who actually want to use them. So not thrilled with that news. I'll have a link in the show notes. And on top of that, this is happening right when this second piece of news is happening, and this one isn't a surprise to too many people. The Wall Street Journal is reporting that RV stocks are dropping after Airstream parent flashes demand warning. It's interesting that they use the term Airstream parent rather than Thor Industries, who make a very large proportion of motorhomes. But yeah, basically, everyone bought motorhomes during COVID, and they still have them. And the demand is not where it was. I know this because we just bought an Airstream at a much lower price than we thought we would have to pay. And what does this mean for you? Well, if you're looking to buy a Winnebago or Thor or Coachman or whatever Class B, for example, you might have pretty good pricing right now. Don't be afraid of driving a hard bargain. A lot of these dealer lots are filled to the brim with RVs. I know the place I went to in Florida, they had no space. There were hundreds of RVs on their lot. And you can drive a hard bargain. There is one problem, though. Interest rates. Interest rates are high. And if you have excellent credit, you're looking at 8.5% or so. So that is not great compared to years past. So consider that. If you can't pay cash, well, you got the interest rate thing to overcome. And that's part of the reason why there's so many RVs on lots. But yeah, feel free to drive a hard bargain if you can. Oddly, cargo vans, from my experience, are still pretty expensive. I've seen some articles that they're coming down in price, but the fact is that they're still hard to get, and that means they're still fairly pricey. And, well, the same is true for pickup trucks, too, for that matter. And one last piece of news, and this is good news, I think, is that VanFest New England is happening. When I was at VanFest in Florida, the organizer said he wasn't sure he could make VanFest New England happen, but now he says he's going to make it happen this summer. It was going to be a fall event, and now it's going to be a summer event. No dates and no place announced yet, but they've officially announced that they're going to do it. And given that April is fast upon us, I hope they hurry up. I cannot promise that I will be there, but I would love to be there. I mean, I feel New England is where I'm from originally, so New England feels like home to me. I do not get back there often enough, and if this is an excuse to go, I'm going to take it. If I can, I'm finding my schedule's filling up crazy. But anyway, that's the news for this time. And if you guys find any kind of juicy news bits you want me to share, please send them along to jeff@builtogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Product review. This is a little maybe a little bit controversial, but I'm going to review a car dealership. Well, actually, a chain. It's not even a chain. It's a massive nationwide car dealership called CarMax. You've probably heard of CarMax. They are the big guys, and they compete with Carvana, but not really. CarMax is different. I have purchased many, many vehicles from CarMax. I was trying to count how many, and I've lost count. Maybe a dozen? I mean, seriously, it has been a lot. And here's the catch. I haven't always kept them. I've returned vehicles to CarMax and gotten a full refund. And that's one of the reasons that I'm going to recommend CarMax. CarMax lets you buy the vehicle with no haggling, by the way. They don't have haggling. The price is the price. And of course, they tack on some fees, but still, the price is the price. And then you've got a week to drive it around, up to 1,000 miles, I think, now. And if you don't like it, you bring it back and they give you your money back. That's it. And it really is, that's it. The times I've returned vehicles, and I can think of 3 different vehicles that I returned, it was just a matter of going in and giving them the keys, and that was it. No hassle, no pressure, nothing like that. It was dead simple. The other thing they give you is a 30-day warranty, a really good warranty. It basically covers the whole vehicle, and I just used it. So you may recall, if you listened to the bonus episode a few weeks ago, that when I bought my pickup truck from CarMax, the emergency brake didn't work. You would step on the emergency brake, and it wouldn't release, which is kind of a problem. And I told them at CarMax, they said, no problem, we'll get that fixed. Just bring it to any CarMax dealer when you can, and they will take care of it. And, well, they did. I just picked it up actually yesterday from the CarMax dealer in Hillside, Illinois, and they ended up spending thousands of dollars fixing this parking brake. They replaced the entire thing, including the entire brake assembly, the drum, all the linkages, everything. They replaced it all because they weren't sure it was going to be safe. And I'm like, thank you. This is the kind of reason that I buy from CarMax. If I'd bought this from Joe's Auto Sales down the street, they would have just laughed at me. Now, you can argue that since CarMax inspects all their cars and they only sell the best cars, how did it get by that there was this problem on this truck that they sold? I don't know. That's a fair argument. You can also argue that CarMax is never the cheapest way to buy a vehicle. And I will agree with that. CarMax prices are not the best. You will find cheaper prices on eBay and, you know, Facebook Marketplace and whatever. You may be able to find cheaper prices at traditional car dealers, but maybe not. It depends on how well you are at haggling. But for me, that extra price is well worth it. Just for the security, knowing that I can have, I have that 30-day warranty to find anything wrong. And, in, you know, 30 days is plenty of time to find out if there's something wrong with the vehicle, usually. And I can just return it if I don't like it. For me, that's worth it. Everybody has always been friendly and nice. And yeah, folks, I'm a big fan of CarMax. I've been using CarMax since they were part of Circuit City way back in the 90s, if you remember that. And I've really not had a bad experience with them. So I'm not the kind of person who is thrilled with recommending large companies, but I have just had so many good experiences with CarMax that I think if you're looking for a van or some other vehicle that you'd like to camp out of, take a look at their website at the very least. I mean, their search engine, which isn't as good as Carvana's, sadly, but it's still pretty good, will show you all your options. The one thing you cannot get from CarMax is a cargo van. You can get minivans galore, you can get SUVs, you can get trucks, but they don't sell cargo vans. So if you're looking for that empty ProMaster, yeah, CarMax isn't going to help you. So anyway, it's CarMax.com. I will not have a link in the show notes because hopefully you can figure that out on your own. Tales from the road. Yeah, I've titled this Rice Krispie Kayaking, which might conjure an image of me making a kayak out of Rice Krispies, or maybe Rice Krispie treats, or no, it's none of that. What is the tagline of Rice Krispies? It is Snap, Crackle, Pop. And they actually had little characters that were Snap, Crackle, and Pop. And that's because when you pour milk on Rice Krispies, it makes a sound. And many of you are familiar with the sound, if not all of you. Well, imagine hearing that sound while you're kayaking. So I was kayaking on Sanibel Island. There's a kayak trail in Tarpon Bay. It's very nice. You get to see all kinds of wildlife, and you're kayaking in the mangroves, and it's lovely. I recommend it to anybody. And I'm just kayaking along and looking at the mangroves and all the birds and critters climbing around in the mangroves. And I just noticed that I kept hearing Rice Krispies. I kept hearing the sound of Rice Krispies. And in this particular occasion, even though I'm calling this kayaking, it was actually in an aluminum canoe. And I'm thinking, do I have a leak? Is this the sound of air bubbles kind of escaping into the canoe? And I wasn't really worried about it because I could see there wasn't that much water in the canoe. It wasn't like I was going to sink out there. And it was only 2 feet deep anyway. But I started just like wondering what this phenomenon was and why could I only hear it in the canoe? And I had this wonder for years after. I just had no idea what this was. What am I doing in this canoe that's causing this snap, crackle, pop sound? So years later, I was doing research for another podcast, and I came across that term, the Rice Krispies sound, in an article written about a shrimp. And it turns out that what I was hearing were the sounds made by an animal called the pistol shrimp. And the reason I was hearing it so prominently was that the canoe, the metal canoe, was acting as a resonator, and the sounds from underwater were kind of being amplified and angled towards me so they were much more apparent, because this is not a sound that I have heard just walking around in the mangroves, which I've done many times. This was only in the canoe. So I'm going to tell you about the pistol shrimp here, and you are free not to believe me, but all the science supports what I'm about to say. So pistol shrimps look like little lobsters. They have one big claw and one little claw. And they're little. These are shrimp. They're not the size of lobsters. They're an inch or two big. They're not that big. I actually had one as a pet. That's a whole other story. Oh, my life has been so weird. Anyway, that big claw that they have, if you imagine a main lobster claw, there's that little thumb part that comes out, and then there's the big mitt that's, the bulk of the claw. The thumb part in a pistol shrimp actually locks back like a pistol, and then they can snap it, and that's what's making the sound. It's pistol shrimp snapping their claws, making the sound. But that snap is so incredibly powerful that it will stun any fish in their vicinity and give them a meal. I mean, that's kind of how it works. But it's also so powerful that it creates a cavitation bubble, that the temperature in the middle of the bubble approaches the heat of the sun. These things produce that much heat. Now, physicists will tell you there is a difference between temperature and energy. They're not producing the energy of the sun. They're just producing the temperature of the sun, which is how fast molecules move, basically. But wait, there's more. They produce such a cavitation, which is a bubble. It's, you know, a bubble in the water. That's a cavitation. That when it collapses, it produces light. It produces light because it's so loud that light is produced. It's called sonoluminescence. So these little tiny Rice Krispie shrimp that I'm hearing in my canoe are actually making little light bubbles that are about the temperature of the sun underneath my canoe. And that's what I'm hearing. These things are so loud that the U.S. Navy has to have filters in their submarine to remove the sound of these things, because something like 40 to 60% of the sound in all the world's oceans comes from pistol shrimp making Rice Krispie sounds. Crazy stuff. I actually have an article that I wrote years ago that's in Atlas Obscura on pistol shrimp. I don't even know if it's still there, but yeah. Today, you now know about pistol shrimp. This is a thing that's real, and you can hear it while you're kayaking, or at least canoeing. A place to visit. So, I'm going to Texas next weekend, or whenever it is, to see the eclipse on April 8th. I will be in Texas at a closed event. I'm sorry I can't invite anyone. But, yeah, that's where I'm going to be, and I imagine a lot of you are going to be there, because Texas, the totality goes right through the middle of Texas. And one of the reasons to go to Texas for the eclipse is that they have the best chance of having decent weather. While it goes all the way up through Vermont and into Montreal and all those kind of things, and honestly, I'd much rather be in Vermont than Texas, the chance of the weather being clear is much less. So down to Texas I go. But heck, you know, the totality of this thing is going to last for 4 minutes, or 3 minutes even. So what are you going to do for the rest of your time in Texas? Well, I've got a suggestion for you. About 27 miles from Austin, which is right where a lot of people are going, there is a place called Bedroll Squirrel. I hope I'm pronouncing that right. Bedroll. I actually thought it said bedroll, but it's B-E-R-D-O-L. Well, Bedroll Squirrel. And they have, so far as I know, the world's only pecan pie vending machine. You can put money into a machine, and it will give you a pecan pie, or a pecan pie. I actually don't know how they pronounce it in Texas, so I figure I'll say it both ways, thus guaranteeing I'll offend everyone. So, yes, folks, if you want a pecan pie, or actually if you just want some pecans, you can go to Bedroll Squirrel and just put your money in the machine, and out will come a pie. Now, I do not believe it is hot, but it is an entire pie. It's not just a slice. It's the whole pie, and then you can heat it up yourself. This is part of their pecan candy and gift company, Bedroll, B-E-R-D-O-L-L, pecan candy and gift company. Yeah, they sell pecan stuff, and vending machine is just one way that they do it. They also have a giant squirrel, and you know, you can have your picture taken with the giant squirrel. It is quite big. It appears to be about 12 feet tall. Yeah, oh, I'm sorry. It's 14 feet tall. It is the largest squirrel statue in the world. So there you go. Apparently, its photo appears on social media at least 100 times a day. And yeah, so you can do that. Hey, we're all about doing new things here. why not go visit the giant squirrel and get a pecan pie out of a vending machine? I mean, I'm pretty sure it's something you've never done before, and, you know, I'll bet they have postcards, too. Resource recommendation. For those of you who have black tanks or cassette toilets, which I do, I think this summer I'm going to have to deal with 4 different black tanks, which is going to make my life a lot of fun. But, you know, having a solution in the tanks is pretty common, and it used to be that you'd buy these this blue stuff and pour it in there. And the main ingredient in that blue stuff was actually formaldehyde. And it did a pretty good job of keeping the smells down. But yeah, we don't want so much formaldehyde anymore, even though our own bodies produce it. That's another rant. But The things you buy, like TST and whatever, all the little pods and things you pour in there, in my experience, don't really work that well. I mean, they'll make it smell a little better for a few days, maybe. But there are a number of people who've come up with their own solutions for how to produce chemicals that help make your black tank life easier. Now, one method, and this is actually the method I usually use, is to simply not add any chemicals, just empty it often. If you can do that, I think that's the best. But say, sparing that, let's say you're going camping for a week off-grid and you have to keep the stuff in there for a while, I think this is the one I'm going to try this summer. Now, I haven't tried this yet, so you're going to have to do your own research. That's why this is a resource recommendation and not a product review. But Clean Tank, K-L-E-E-N, tank.com, has a formula that they use, and they actually have a good argument for it. So their argument is that the formula that they recommend, and I'll give you the recipe here in just a sec, does not break down the waste. Black tanks are holding tanks. They're not septic tanks. You don't want anything to break down. You want things to stay exactly the same as they are so that you can flush them somewhere where they will be processed. If they're broken down, which is what a lot of these chemicals do, so a lot of the stuff you buy at Camping World or wherever will actually break stuff down. It turns the stuff into kind of a slurry that is sticky and not as liquid, and it sticks to the sensors, and it's harder to get out. You have to use a ton of water to rinse it out and all that. It's not really what you want. What these guys have done is they've just made a formula that keeps the stuff in there not smelling horrible and not sticking to the sides of the tank. And the secret is two basic ingredients: Pine Sol, or something similar, and Calgon bath pearls. Now, the Pine Sol part is pretty obvious. It's a good deodorizer, and it does make things less sticky. So what you do is you take a regular jug, you know, like an antifreeze jug or something like that, pour in 40 ounces of Pine Sol, and then you add 8 ounces of Calgon bath pearls. Now, what are Calgon bath pearls? These are old-fashioned pearl things that you would dump into your bubble bath. What they are little water softener pills, and by softening the water, it makes it much less sticky. So you add 8 ounces of those pearls into your 40 ounces of Pine Sol, fill it up with water all the way, and then you end up with a gallon of stuff. And every time you empty your holding tank, add a half a cup of this. And you can use it in your gray tank and your black tank. Now, if you're using a cassette toilet, half a cup seems like kind of a lot. But then again, it's only half a cup. And since cassette toilets are in your living space, maybe you want the extra concentration. I don't know. I haven't played with this yet. But if you'd like to learn more about this, you can go to cleantank.com. Remember, that's with a K. And then, well, the URL's long. It's throw-away-your-RV-tank-additive-use-this-instead/. I will have a link in the show notes, but I'm intrigued by this. I will take a look, and, you know, it looks like it'll be a lot less expensive, too. Well, folks, thank you very much for listening to episode 204. Music, as always, is by Simon Wagg. If you'd like to get a hold of me for any reason, you can find me on Facebook at the Built to Go Facebook group. We also have a Discord server, and you can always get a hold of me at jeff@builttogo.com. That's 2 T's, not 3, not 1. Until next time, remember the words of Vivian Ming, who said, AI might be a powerful technology, but things won't get better simply by adding AI. He was involved in some controversies in Swaziland.